Welcome to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined with Seth Wintrall, who unfortunately wasn't there last week, but this time, no technical issue. Seth is here with us. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm good, thanks.
Awesome. Plenty of things to talk about this week. Of course, it's going to be a Tesla-heavy podcast because of the Q1 2019 production and delivery numbers that we're going to try to digest all together. And a bunch of other stuff too, but first off, let's start with a word from our sponsor, Dandelion. Seth?
So Dandelion Energy is again sponsoring the Electric Podcast. We love Dandelion because they are a very green company that gets New Yorkers and northeastern United States folks off of oil and propane and onto geothermal. Geothermal, if you don't know, is a way of pulling the energy from a deep, 5 feet and lower in the ground, and bringing that up into your house. You have cooling in the summer, heating in the winter, and Dandelion's found kind of a physics first principle way to drill and make it all a lot less expensive. In New York State, they have incentives that make, you know, like a $38,000 installation cost $19,000. And even better, we have a little bit of news today. Con Edison, which is most of Westchester, kind of the lower part of New York, a lot of New York City as well, and Dandelion are partnering up, and they're going to offer Westchester homeowners an additional $5,000 off their geothermal installation. And that's as of, I think the news came out yesterday. So in addition to the 30% New York State back, or 30% federal, 20% New York State, additional $5,000. So a typical like 4-bedroom home will cost around $38,000. After savings, it goes down to $19,000. And now with this Westchester incentive, it'll go down to around $15,000. Which, you know, if you're like me, we spend a lot of money on heating oil. $15,000, that's like, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years. Like it's kind of crazy. So again, if you want to check it out, dandelionenergy.com/electric, and you'll save a bunch and much greener for the environment.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, let's start the show with, of course, the Q1 delivery and production numbers that came out earlier this week. So Tesla is required to release the preliminary numbers within 3 days of the end of the quarter, which was April 3rd. And those numbers are going to be revised when Tesla released their earnings in a month or two. But for now, it's the best we got. And it is, we knew that it was going to be down, so it's not exactly disappointing. But there's a few things that are clearly disappointing in the numbers. So overall, what we're talking about here, it's 77,000 vehicles produced and 63,000 vehicles delivered. If you break them down between the Model 3, Model S, and X, the Model 3 deliveries were 50,900, and Model S and X, 12,100. For the first time in as long as I can remember, Tesla didn't break down the Model S and X deliveries. They just bundled them up together. But first of all, let's take a look at the Model 3 here. 50,000 deliveries, that's that's down significantly a quarter over quarter from Tesla's production at the end of the last quarter was 62,950. So production was around 5,000 units per week, which is similar to what Tesla had a quarter before that. But deliveries, on the other hand, way down at 50,000 units. We knew that to some degree that would happen because of the shift from North American deliveries to European and Chinese deliveries in China. And we, from what we understood from what Tesla sort of let out in the first few weeks of the quarter, there was definitely logistical issues to deliver those vehicles. The European delivery teams have never seen that kind of volume. So that's part of the problem. Of course, then there was a second part of the issue, which happened later in the quarter, which was Tesla just making some very strange move when it comes to the pricing of the vehicles. When it comes to the actual buying process, too, when we refer to the online-only sales model that they transitioned to at the end of the quarter. And so those move indicated that Tesla was more, I think, of a demand issue, but maybe it wasn't just a logistical issue with the European deliveries. So that comes into play. But in the press release this week, Tesla tried to emphasize that there is not that big of a demand issue that the Model 3 has, because they say that they only have 2 weeks. 2 weeks of Model 3 inventory that they have right now, and they compare that for several months, which is the average for the industry. Now, I would have a little comment about that, which is that unlike the rest of the industry, though Tesla is, at least for the Model 3, it's a custom order only model. I mean, for the Model S and X, they did transition to a somewhat inventory model for a while. Custom orders are still the main way to buy a Model S and X, but they do build some inventory that they keep in some strategic location to move the car faster. But they haven't done that with Model 3s because of the long-standing, massive backlog of reservation that they got. So I don't know, Seth, what do you think about like a two weeks inventory from Model 3, which is around 10,000 units? Does that sound like a lot to loot? That sounds like a demand issue, or is just like Tesla presents it at just a lot lower than the average in the industry?
It is a little bit scary because Tesla doesn't really have any inventory usually, besides what's on a boat. I think it'll be interesting to see in this quarter if Tesla is able to meet demand, because the first people who get their cars, like a lot of people are probably waiting to see what one looks like firsthand. I mean, you got to remember, like all these Europeans, which the Model 3 kind of fits Europe better, smaller streets, smaller cars. They've never even seen a Model 3, like not in the wild, not in a showroom, nothing. So I think the demand will kind of go up and hopefully, erase a lot of whatever inventory is left over. Although, like, frankly, I don't even know how it works. Like, I don't know if this 2 weeks of inventory is what's on a boat or what's on, what's sitting in
I feel parking. Like if it's the transit thing, they would have made it clear. Like, that's just what we have in transit. It's already going to customer. But the fact that it didn't make that clear made it seem like it might be, like, a separate inventory, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell. Like a lot of things, like, there's a lot of ambiguity in what's been told to us. So, I don't know. I mean, things I do know, like people who get their Teslas really love them, like the Model 3s. Your Twitter feed is no exception there.
If you guys go to my Twitter right now, you can see me hugging my Tesla after 3 months apart. So, which is, of course, in jest, but still the sentiment is represented.
Right. So people love them. Like, people are going to buy them. They're a little bit expensive right now. Hopefully cheaper ones come in, but I think the fundamentals are okay. Like, it's a great car. Like, they're getting them off the assembly line. If a lot of times we get a lot of noise from like the shorts and the media companies that kind of listen to them, that it's always big problems, but I don't see a long-term demand issue. I think these cars are going to kind of fan out, and somebody's friend just got a Tesla Model 3 in Germany, and they're going to be like, "Oh, that's a pretty sweet car. I want to get one of those." So I don't see long-term problems with any of this, but in the short term, I think Tesla's got like logistical nightmare to deal with, kind of going from a Model S and X type of operation to a
three vehicle lineup.
Yeah, and then obviously having that weird, I think Tesla panicked midway through the quarter, and their CEO kind of panicked a little bit through the quarter. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it seemed like the price movements were very erratic. And the hey, we're closing the stores, we're not closing the stores, like that kind of stuff doesn't inspire confidence to customers or investors or anyone. And it's becoming a little bit harder, more frustrating. Like, when I wear my Tesla t-shirt out, people are like, "Oh, that guy's crazy." Like, instead of used to be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of factors at play, and it's, I think the fundamentals are good though. Like, you know, hopefully Elon's kind of chill right now, doesn't do any like wild erratic moves. The cars are great. You know, some come with some issues here and there, but fundamentally the cars are good. Demand is going to be good. It's not bad now if it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I tend to agree for the most part with you, except if we go, though, to move on to Model S and X, I think there's a clear demand issue right now.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's just the short term, and we can go into that, but all right. So what happened here is Tesla delivered 12,100 Model S and X. And again, like I said, they don't even break them down anymore, which leads me to believe that might be one of them that looks a lot worse than it should. So compare that 12,100 to 27,550 during the previous quarter. So a quarter-to-quarter drop of 56%. So that's something like you need to look at.
That's a problem. And yeah. I think the Model S is probably the one that's hurting the most. And the biggest problem is the cannibalization from the Model 3. As a former Model S owner, and when I got in the Model 3, I was like, this is better in every way for me. Like, a lot of people are going to want bigger cars, you know, a little bit bigger. I mean, interior, like, it's not much bigger, the Model S. I mean, you get a bigger trunk. Like, it's hard to justify a Model S when there's a Model 3. Like, for me, I think there's, like, a very small sliver of people who are going to get a Model S. When, you know, the current Model S versus the current Model 3. Now, if we're going to speculate, I think you've brought up a couple of times that there's a refresh coming, probably in the next few months or so.
Tesla doesn't do refresh, Seth. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot. Never mind. But, you know, if there was an additional, you know, like the Model S should charge as fast, if not faster, than the Model 3. Yeah. It should go significantly faster. It should have the same kind of screen. And, you know, we from that exclusive, we know that Tesla's working on that kind of stuff. So right now, it's like I would not recommend anybody buy a Model S. And I imagine a lot of smart Tesla folks are thinking the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, either I'll wait or I'll get a Model 3. Now, Model X is kind of a different class. Like, it's a much bigger vehicle.
That's what I would like to know the breakdown. I mean, you're right. Like, why are they not releasing that? It's so weird.
Yeah, my gut feeling is that Model S sold like 1,000, and Model X sold like 11,000 or something.
Okay, I'm not sure it's that drastic, but yeah, I know what you're saying here.
Yeah, it's down.
In terms of the cannibalization with Model S and 3, I'm not sure that, like, you might be right, but the thing is, Model 3 has been around for over a year now, and we really haven't seen any sign of that until the last quarter. If that's what it's happening, I feel like it's a little bit weird that it took that long for it to happen. Of course, there was also the reservation backlog with the Model 3, so, and now Model 3 is more like a wildly available one, so any new Tesla customer can come in and make a choice between Model 3 and Model S. So that might be the thing that is happening here.
And Model 3 just arrived outside of North America, so you still had Model S and X as the only Teslas available in Europe and Asia.
Correct. And only the higher-end version of the Model 3 available in Europe and in Asia. And those models, of course, are going to be more cannibalizing of Model S cells than the lower-end version ones, which because they have a bigger discrepancy in terms of pricing. But I think that the biggest effect on the biggest impact on Model S cells and Model X cell also are coming from the anticipation of a hardware upgrade and the design refresh. So the design refresh, we have an exclusive report on that a year ago. So it might have increasingly have an impact as closer we get to that date, which we said was coming around Q3, probably the end of Q3, the start of Q3. So like probably like June, July, August, that type of time frame. But the other thing, and you mentioned that briefly, was probably an hardware upgrade in terms of the capacity, the performance specs of the vehicle. The biggest indication of that was a Supercharger V3 event, which was only launched for Model 3. Model S and X were just briefly mentioned as having upcoming higher charge rate and unconfirmed at the actual rate that it's going to be. So I think that had the biggest impact on Model S and X. So when Tesla said that, they basically said, they're basically saying something's coming from Alaskan X, we're just not telling you what. So that goes completely again with what Tesla generally does, which is not sell word until they can actually release the product. This time, it looks like they felt like they needed to announce Supercharger V3 for Model 3, which probably did help the sales on the Model 3, even though deliveries were disappointing. So I don't know.
So there's this there's a saying that Steve Jobs, the Apple founder, always said. He said something to the effect of, if you're not cannibalizing yourself, somebody else will. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying somebody else would have, but the fact that Tesla is cannibalizing itself or its own vehicles with other vehicles is probably the best case scenario.
You're right, definitely. Yeah.
And hopefully they're making some money on Model 3s that they're selling.
Yeah, well, the gross margin is not exactly bad for the industry as a whole, but there's no doubt they had a bigger gross margin on Model S and X. So
clearly,
if you're stealing away some Model S market share with the Model 3, then Tesla is definitely attacking its own bottom line. So there's that to take into account. But again, we were talking about how the demand issue might be temporary, and I think it's going to be temporary for Model S and X also, because those upgrades are coming. For the higher charge rates, it's still unclear what's going to happen, if it's going to be the same 250 as Model 3. I hope it will. I think it might be. But other electric exclusive, and even podcast exclusive right now, because the post is coming a little bit later. I couldn't publish before the podcast. But we're going to see soon a powertrain upgrade for the Model S and X, where Tesla is going to move to a permanent magnet reluctance motor, like the one that they developed for the Model 3, but a new version for Model S and X, which is going to make those cars more efficient and going to increase the range. And there might be a few other upgrades coming with that. So keep a lookout for an upcoming post.
When is that coming?
Might be as soon as the next few weeks. That's the timeline is not as clear as the actual upgrade to the permanent magnet reluctance motors. But I have a few different sources that say that the timing might be fairly close. So it might be coming before that planned interior design refresh that we previously reported on for end of Q2, start of Q3, 2019. I think that will boost Model S and X sales, combined with the charging rate increase, combined with the design refresh. So depending on the timing of those, again, are not exactly clear, but it looks like they're all going to happen by the end of the year. So maybe it's going to make some people wait for having all of those things combined together, because as Elon Musk likes to mention, Tesla doesn't do refresh. They just include the improvement in the car as soon as they are ready, which might mean that those things are all coming together at the same time, but then a few different things. Though that can be good too, because like the design refresh that we posted pictures of, some people didn't like it because it's a similar, more like Model 3 style interior, even though there's still an instrument cluster. So you might want that Supercharger V3 capacity. You might want the new permanent magnet motors, but not one that design refresh. So there's still room to play here. But by the end of the year, I think the Model S and X are going to be much better vehicles than they are now, which they are already great vehicle and definitely market leaders in their own segments. So by the end of the year, they're going to be even more competitive within the segment, and even competitive, if not much better than the next generation of EVs that are coming out. Though we're still giving them a shot for sure, like talking about the Porsche Taycan or and vehicles like that, which a lot of people are pinning the Taycan as being the first real performance Model S competitor, which I think is a fair representation.
Yeah. So that's other. You know, if we go back to the main question, like what are the demand hurdles? Like there is the Audi, the Porsche, the Jaguar, upcoming Mercedes, like all of these things are coming. You know, some people may opt for those. So that could be a demand thing, although we've never seen any direct evidence of that. Although I think Porsche said that their number one customer was coming from Tesla or something. Anyway, the other thing is, and I think this everybody kind of knows, but the amount is in question. like the Q4 to Q1 is always a drop, like for everybody. Like Q4 is like when everybody buys stuff. Q1, like, you know, if you compare sequentially to year over year, you know, Tesla's up obviously year over year, not as much as you would expect. Mm-hmm. But
Tesla, not for Model S and X though. Model S and X, they're still down 46%. So
right. Yeah. But so, I mean, as far as Model 3 is concerned, mm-hmm. like Tesla had a like all out, like, you know, they were moving stuff out of the Gigafactory, you know, sales till midnight. Like they just went all out trying to get stuff out the door before the end of the $7,500 US tax credit. So like a lot of people who might have bought in January or February or March, they bought in December to get that extra money. So, you know, that's a major reason why demand for the Model 3 was lower, and a little bit for the Model S and X, because that wasn't the case last year. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that are, you know, why Tesla sold a lot fewer cars this year. But mm-hmm. I think that is a big part of it as well.
Yeah, sorry, I'll lag for a little bit of last thing, and I lost what you said. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of reasons for sure, and there are short-term reasons. Long-term, the demand is still good. That's the biggest takeaway for sure. Now, real quick, we're going to look into Model 3 demand in Europe, because there was the launch in Europe during the last quarters, and per market, Tesla did very well in some of the most flagship electric vehicle markets in the U.S., in Europe, I mean. Norway, as usual, the number one market for Tesla in Europe and the whole world per capita. Over 5,000 deliveries in March alone, making it the best-selling, not just electric vehicle, but vehicle period in Norway. Though, of course, the best-selling vehicle in Norway is always electric, so that's not a big change. It helped the whole market in Norway push over 50% of all electric vehicle sales, closer to 70% when you call plug-in hybrids. So Norway is really showing the rest of the world like that you can transition to all electric vehicle sales for an entire market, with just a few other more models coming up in the next, this year really. Like the e-tron still got some good deliveries last month, I think close to 700, but they should still ramp up throughout the end of the year. Then their Mercedes EQC, they're going to have a stunning year in Europe. But still, coming back to Model 3, Model 3 is going to be the best-selling car all year. I'm pretty sure of it. Same thing in the Netherlands. Best-selling EV there. Fifth most sold car in the country. So pretty good again. Austria, 752 deliveries. A big markup for the first time. Sweden, over 1,000 Model 3 deliveries. Making one of the best-selling cars there too. Germany, also doing very well in Germany. And what to keep in mind, of course, is that that's all with just the two higher-end version of the Model 3, which is performance version and the long-range all-wheel drive version. They still haven't launched the rear-wheel drive version or the smaller battery packs version. When those come, then those numbers should be dwarfed technically by the demand for those cars, technically. Now, we're going to move on to the problem with those cars is that at least the base one, the $35,000 standard range Model 3, still doesn't really exist. Even though it was launched last month, officially launched last month, and at that point it was already late by like what, a year or something. Like Tesla first said when they started production, it would be there like in 6 months or something. So it's been over a year. So it was already late. But Tesla opened up orders for it last month. I think last week of February. At that point, they said 2 to 4 weeks. Of course, it's a delay. As far as we know, there's been no evidence of any kind of standard range delivery, so Tesla has never delivered the promised $35,000 price point for the Model 3. And at the end of last quarter, a bunch of people that had actual delivery dates set were told that Tesla was were told by Tesla that they wouldn't deliver. They didn't give them a new delivery date, and they tried to upsell them to a standard range plus vehicle. Which is not exactly surprising for Tesla. At the surface, it looks just like another delivery delay. But when it gets a little bit weird here, and that's why we posted in our article yesterday about the vehicle not existing yet, is then when you got into the actual spec of the car, and we've been asking for a while, what's the difference between the standard range Model 3 and the standard range plus Model 3? Of course, we can talk about the interior difference, because there's one interior that's only for the plus version and one for the standard version. But aside from the interior, the battery pack itself, so what you get a battery pack for that, what is it, 20, 40 miles difference that you get between the pack? Are they different pack? Are they a same pack? What's one of them is a software lock? That hasn't been clear. Tesla didn't want to confirm that. But what happens then when Tesla first launched a vehicle, we saw that they were listing them both at the same weight. So when we saw that, so that means that there's just one new pack, the standard range plus, and Tesla's software locking capacity of the pack for the standard range version. So we reached out to Tesla and said, hey, you guys are listing the same weight, so it has to be the explanation. And a spokesperson told us that was likely a mistake. They don't think that it's a software lock pack, so we just drop it because Tesla was just saying it's a mistake. It's going to be updated. The website's going to be updated. Weeks later, this website wasn't updated. So I'm like, are you guys sure that it's a mistake? Because it's an easy fix. You guys just put that thing on the scale and then you know the weight, right? And you put it on a website. Then at that point, Tesla said that we're going to look into it. That spokesperson in person said they were going to look into it. Days later, I inquire again and I have no answer. So I go to another spokesperson who again tells me, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to look into that. They look into it. I give them 3 days. They answered me that, oh, we're going to get you back the next day. They did not. And they ended up telling me that they have no comment on it. No comment on the weight of a car that should be delivered weeks ago. So in my view, they either don't even know the weight of the car, or they don't want to say that it's software lock, or it's not software lock. It's another reason, and we just don't understand. So Tesla is being extremely weird about that stuff, and we have no evidence that this car has been delivered to date. So that's why I'm saying that the $35,000 Model 3, which is arguably the biggest feature of that car, it's been promised for years now that Tesla is going to be delivering a car at $35,000, a mass market vehicle, and they haven't done that just yet, guys. So,
and it's clear, like, it's not something that's out of the realm of possibility. Like, it's the price is getting close anyway. The next one up is only 3,000 more. It's not hard to make a smaller battery pack. Like, it's easier theoretically. So there's no hard thing to do here. It's probably a logistical error. Like, maybe they can't get the canvas seats, or, you know, maybe they can't get the new battery pack.
But perfect. Say it then. Don't. Well, why it being so?
Well, that's an error. I mean, for me, that's a mistake. They should come out and say, hey, this is the problem that we're having. Sorry, it's going to be another 2 weeks or whatever. Or maybe it's, you know, so horrible, like, they have to go back and redesign the battery pack, and it's going to take a half a year or something crazy. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're trying to figure that out. Maybe they're trying to figure out, hey, this battery pack, you know, it isn't strong enough and it breaks. So we have to go back and redesign it. And that's going to take, you know, 3 months or 1 month. We don't know yet. Maybe they just don't know when it's going to, you know, there's a lot of possibilities, but always going to be better to come out and say, hey, look, we don't know how long it's going to be. This is the problem. We're solving it. Not just, you know, radio silence and all the owners or all the people who are expecting their car are just like, what's going on? There's no communication. And it's not the communication to the owner advisors. They don't know anything. They're just like, you know, Tesla just tells us, like, they're not coming. And we don't know when they're coming. We don't get any information. So it's a little bit frustrating. A lot of times, you know, as a media outlet and a big Tesla media outlet, Tesla will give us information on what's happening. In this case, frustratingly, they didn't. And it's, I guess that's how it goes. Like, there are no $35,000 Model 3s. Like, they don't exist in reality yet. So why is that? And where are they? And, it would have been nice if this story, like, rattled some cages, but it doesn't sound like it did because we haven't got any information.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Tesla always could use better communication in terms of, like you said, not just the owners, not just the internal teams, but also like with the media in general. That story felt so weird to me. Like I thought I was asking like a simple question, like very simple question about a product that's been announced. It wasn't something like I wasn't like getting a scoop or something like that. It's just about an unannounced product. It's an announced product. You guys are listing the weight. We are asking why the weight are the same for those two versions of the car, which should have different battery packs. So weird. Two different spokesperson gives me two different answers and then stop answering. I don't know. Get it together, guys. All right. Moving on to the full self-driving computer, previously known as the Hardware 3.0 autopilot computer. It's apparently in production. So I don't know if it means that all new cars in production gets it, or like it's in production, it's now getting gradually introduced into production cars, but it is in production. We've seen some cars that are listed with Hardware 3 now. And Tesla announced it in the press release that it's in production at the same time as they were announcing an autopilot autonomous driving day for investors, and I don't know if it's here for some reason. All right, sorry, I don't have the actual name of it. I think it's Autopilot Investor Day or something like that. But it's a day for investors. They were going to present the latest full self-driving technology and the latest autopilot technology powered by this new computer, which is now just called the full self-driving computer or the FSD computer. And when it was announced for April 19th, but last night they pushed it to April 22nd. And along with the demonstration and everything for investors, the All Heaven is going to be webcast, and we're going to learn more about the full self-driving capacity of the Tesla's vehicles, the latest improvement to autopilot. And Elon Musk also said that they are going to talk about their plans for a shared fleet, what was previously known as Tesla Network, though I'm not sure if Tesla stuck to that word anymore because they remove a bunch of that language in their on their website. But it's the Uber, Lyft competitor system where once Tesla vehicle are autonomous, you can add your own car to the fleet, and Tesla's going to have also their own car providing a Uber-like service autonomously. So we're going to have an update on those plans, as well as the latest full self-driving and autopilot capabilities of the cars, both on a software perspective and also on what can the new hardware do, because of course the new hardware is being put in the car right now. But as Elon said most recently, is that there's actually a disadvantage for the new hardware based on the software, because they developed all the software for autopilot to work on autopilot hardware 2.0, 2.5, and so it's not optimized right now for 3.0, which of course though has a lot more computing power. So they're going to be able to do new things on the 3.0 that it cannot do on 3.0 that it cannot do on 3.0 or 2.5. So
do you think it'll be like the jump from 1.0 to 2.0 where it'll take a while to get up to speed? You know, some people say that hardware 2.0 and 2.5 still aren't where Mobileye stuff was. What do you think?
Still today? People are saying that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's obviously things like Sentry Mode and a bunch of other stuff, but
but actual autopilot capability like auto steer and stuff.
Yeah,
like
so MKBHD, he's got his car, Model S back after the accident, and he was like, "I'm glad," he said something like, "I'm glad I got this car at the time I did. I wouldn't have changed anything." And I said, "Well, would you have gotten hardware 2.0 if you waited a couple weeks?" And he's like, "Nope, I like hardware 1 better." Because
as he spent a lot of time in 2.0, because
I mean, clearly no, but it isn't a big jump yet, and it took a long time for 2.0 just to get to where 1.0.
Yeah, that's fair, and I do agree that for a long time, yeah, the first version of Autopilot based on the Mobileye hardware was very competitive, if not better in some aspect than Tesla's own system on 2.0. But I think I wouldn't say that's the case anymore with the last like maybe 10 months or something like that. The last five or six major updates were so significant that I wouldn't agree to that statement. I mean,
Do you think though that the hardware 3.0 is going to be a step back?
I'm not sure you said a step back, but I'm for sure it's going to be easier for Tesla because what we need to understand is from the first version to the 2.0, they went from an hardware from Mobileye and using a lot of Mobileye system to using NVIDIA system with their own software, built from the ground up with their own computer vision technology. That was a big leap. So that was a big issue. Now they're still using their own technology. They're just moving the different hardware from NVIDIA to their own neural net accelerator. So I don't think that's going to be that big of a leap for them. They're just going to get a ton more computing power. So they're going to be able to do new things with it. But no, it shouldn't take as long. But we're still talking about bringing a full self-driving capacity to a car here. So it's not like an all-my-bread heater. So,
right.
But yeah, it should be fun. April 22nd, we're going to hear from Elon. We're going to hear from Stuart Bowers, who since last year was hired as the new software head for Autopilot. And Pete Bannon, which is the hardware head for Autopilot. He's the guy that was in charge of building the chip, the new neural net accelerator. He was under, of course, Jim Keller before he left Tesla last year. And we're going to also hear from Henry Cupertino, who is the head of AI at Tesla. So he's been working on the computer vision system.
So let me ask you something. Why invite investors instead of media to an event like this? Or why not both media and investors?
I wouldn't be surprised if both media and investors are there and they call it an investor thing so that some media don't get angry that they don't get invited. Some media like Electrek. Right. Yeah, because we didn't get an invite. But yeah, I don't know. I'd be surprised if there's no media there. There's probably just going to be a select few that they choose to give the demonstration to, because I doubt it's going to be just a webcast. Very much doubt it.
Right.
Do you have any shares of Tesla right now? Are you an investor? Can we get in from
showing your shares around? In Tesla in quite a while.
Yeah.
Although I haven't checked it. Price today.
The price went down, Seth. Maybe you should get in and be an investor.
No, just for 2 seconds. It's way up, man. It's at 275 right now.
Oh, sorry. I lost you for a second here.
It's at 275 right now. It's way up.
Way up. It was way down at 275.
Up 7 points, 2.68%. Hmm. Yeah, it's been up all day. Yesterday was way down.
Yeah, it took a hit. They said like 10%. But yeah. All right, and another Tesla product supposedly coming in 2019 that we've been all looking forward to. That's the Tesla Semi. When Tesla launched a product in 2017, they said it was coming in 2019, but we haven't heard a lot about plans for production since. So we sort of kind of assumed that it was put on the back burner with difficulties with the Model 3 ramp up and everything. But now Elon is talking about the production again. He said that they've been stuck in the logistic and production problem in the last 18 months, and now they are looking forward to getting Semi into production. So that was it. That was the extent of the comment here. So not much to go on. But this also produced some kind of like video about the Tesla Semi prototype delivering Model 3. So some kind of media content being produced about Tesla Semi, which is quite rare. And then the other day, two Tesla Semi prototype showed up at Gigafactory 1, and they were sort of put in display at Gigafactory 1 for some reason. We even thought that maybe it's going to be an announcement about the production being there, because there's been long time rumors about Gigafactory 1 being the location site for the Tesla Semi electric truck, but nothing yet. So I wouldn't be surprised that Tesla does make an announcement fairly soon about the plans for the production of the Semi truck, because it's a commercial product. So it's not like Tesla's other product before for consumers where they get tons of reservation and then there's a delay and then there's another delay and then there's another delay. I'm not saying that it won't be delayed because it's a commercial product, but I think they need to be clear about their plans to bring the vehicle to market, because they already gathered a ton of reservation for the Tesla Semi, and those reservations are from commercial companies or fleet operators. That those reservations, it's not because they want the coolest new truck out there. It's because it's part of their plan to upgrade their fleet, which is something they have to do as part of their business, and it's something that's planned years in advance. So they really need to know when their truck is going to come to market and you're going to be able to add it to their fleet. So I think Tesla needs to be more clear about their production plan on this. And since they first promised a vehicle to come in 2019, and we are now more than 3 months into the year, I think an update should come soon enough for all of us. Really quick, we're going to make a quick note of we had our exclusive first look at Tesla's CCS adapter for the European market. It's on electric right now if you want to take a look. It's just a few pictures that an anonymous tipster sent to us showing that it actually exists. They have the adapter, so they've been talking about it for months, but we haven't seen anything. No update yet on the availability, but since there is one working one, because we see it work too, I have to assume that it's coming quite soon. And that's another thing that's going to help Model S and X sales, because Model 3 in Europe at least had an advantage over Model S in terms of charging availability for charging station, where they could use both Tesla Supercharger, which are rapidly being updated to CCS. And they could use any other CCS station like Fastnet's network or the new Unity network that's coming up. So there's a bunch of high-powered CCS station now coming up in Europe. We have a few too coming up in the US, probably not as many. But Model S could only use Tesla Supercharger. Now with that adapter, they should be able to use both station, which is cool. And I'd like to think that Tesla would be able to leverage their work on that adapter to also not just work with the Type 2 mini key connector that they use in Europe, but the proprietary connector that they use in the US to CCS, so that Tesla owners in the US, both Model 3 and Model S and X, could use CCS station. Not that big of a deal if you ask me, because like normally I'd have access to a Tesla Supercharger before having access as a CCS station.
Yeah, but it won't mean much for us in the US, yeah. But as things go along, this one also looks a lot less complicated than the CHAdeMO adapter, maybe it'll cost a little less. Also, it kind of reminds me that, like, I think when the Model S and X get a refresh, I think they're going to get a charge port that's much bigger, that looks kind of like the Model 3, so that they can fit a CCS, you know, natively in Europe, just like the Model 3.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the picture for the adapters right now, the Type 2 that goes, the adapter goes inside the charge port of the Type 2 charge ports on Model S. And since it's pretty small, it has like to extend a few, like an inch, so that the second part, the bottom part of the CCS combo adapter can actually fit, and then you can plug it in. So yeah, you're right. It probably makes sense to have a slightly larger charge port. All right, moving on from Tesla. Audi. The Audi e-tron, like we said, they're starting up deliveries in Europe in a somewhat significant way. I mean, we've seen Norway getting a few hundred units. A few other markets are also getting a few units. The U.S. is going to follow up next month in May. They're going to start deliveries for the reservation holders, and the dealership are also going to get their first display and test fleet vehicles. And with that announcement, they announced the EPA rating of the Audi, which might be surprising to some, unless you've been reading a coverage on it, 204 EPA rated miles for the Audi e-tron.
It's quite low, especially for a 95 kilowatt battery pack, but there's a reason.
Yeah, there's a good reason for it. So they are being extremely conservative about the longevity of the battery pack. So there's a huge reserve of capacity that you cannot access in it. So they are keeping that so that you don't see any kind of degradation long term, which historically we haven't seen a lot for higher end electric vehicles like Teslas, because there is some degradation, but it's not significant for the first few hundred thousand miles, really. So they might just be very conservative on it, or they're not so sure about their thermal management system. But I don't think that's the case, because I've seen their management system. They've been pretty open about it, about their old battery pack architecture, and it looks pretty solid to me, at least. But the 12% reserve on that 95 kilowatt battery pack, which of course make it a lot less efficient, because there's hundreds of pounds of battery pack that you're carrying around all the time and you never get to use. So it's not really a 95 kilowatt hour battery pack. Well, it is. It's just you're only using just over 80% of it. Of course, yeah, it has different advantage to do that, even though the efficiency goes way down and you only get 204 miles of range. You do have access to a higher charge rate that you're able to maintain for a longer period of time. We've seen it get 155 kilowatt of charge rate and basically maintain it until well over 50% of the battery pack.
It's almost up to 80%, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. 80%, you're right. And so that means you get a full charge faster, or at least, well, most people, we're going to stop it at 80% anyway. But of course, what we know now is that you're not actually stopping at 80%, you're stopping like lower than that because the battery pack is bigger. Still, it's a different approach. People are saying, oh, they're getting killed by Tesla and everything because they have competitive product that go longer, or at least advertise longer. That might be the case. Or, you know what, the market might finally realize that they don't really need more than 204 miles of range for most of their driving, so they might still go with the e-tron. I really don't know, to be honest. We know that it's been a problem for a long time, that kind of range anxiety that people have. I think it's been going down, though. It's not as big as a problem as it used to be. You could argue that's because of the charging networks coming up. You can argue that's because of longer range cars, too. But I think under the people's understanding of their own driving habits and how they could fit into electric vehicle ownership is also part of it. So if that's really the case, I'm not mistaken there, then they might find a good market for the e-tron. I guess we're going to have to wait and see. But next month, I'm going to go drive the U.S. version of it because it's going to be a little bit different from the European ones because I get side mirrors. But we're going to give you another, maybe not a full review from that, but hopefully we can get the car a bit longer term and give you a few full review within the next 2 months. That'd be great.
When is that? Is that late April, you said?
No, mid-May, and I'm driving it,
all right,
the U.S. version. Then hopefully they're going to have some review units available for a more long-term kind of review.
And that's in Lake Tahoe?
Yeah, we're going to San Francisco, to Napa Valley, I think. Napa Valley is north of San Francisco, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I think we're going from there, and we're going to Lake Tahoe. I think.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, it should be a nice drive. I've never been to Napa Valley, too, so it's going to be fun. GM, 18 months ago, almost to the day, they said they're going to launch two new electric cars based on the Chevy Bolt EV. Those were going to be the first two cars that launched a series of new vehicles, but those vehicles after the first two wouldn't be based on the Chevy Bolt, but on the next generation electric vehicles that GM is working on. We've heard of the, what they call the BEV3, I think, the next gen, the one that's the Cadillac's going to launch.
The Cadillac, yeah.
Yeah, the BEV3 platform, it's called. But before that, there was two other cars coming. Never heard of them. 18 months later, the GM hasn't launched anything. So we reached out to them, say, what's up with that, guys? You owe us two cars. We like to have new electric cars to talk about. I mean, it's our bread and butter here, and bread and butter at the Electrek. And at first, we didn't get any response, so we wrote up a report on it, just trying to shame them a little bit, like, you guys need to make more EVs. Then after reports, they came back to us with quite the answer, if you ask me. They claimed that they did introduce two new electric cars in those in that the promised time frame. And those two-digit cars are, I'm going to quote the full comment here from GM. We have introduced both the Buick V8 6 EV and the Baijiang E200 in China within the time frame we said we would in the original announcement. We did not indicate that what markets the vehicle would land in as we compete globally in the EV landscape. So those two cars the spokesperson is referencing here are like a Buick. The Buick V8 is like a Volt-looking car that actually was supposed to be based on the Volt powertrain, but they instead updated it to an all-electric powertrain that's like a match-up of a powertrain used by the joint venture partner that they have in China. And the Baijiang E220 is like little bitty small city car, also based on the model by their GV partner in China. So two models made by a GV company in China. Nothing to do with the Chevy Bolt whatsoever, and only for the Chinese market. So they went from, and I think you had a cool comment about that, said what you said. If that was the case, your press release should have been in Chinese or something like that.
Right.
I think that's a fair comment. Because, yeah, it from the original announcement, it sounded nothing like the two cars are coming. So I'm pretty sure they just came up with those two cars as part of their joint venture partner in China due to the ZEV mandate that they have in China. And they said, well, we did release that in the time frame we announced for the two others. So I'm pretty sure the two other cars that were supposed to come based on the Chevy Bolt EV are dead.
Yeah, I think either canceled or delayed.
Yeah, I think cancel is most likely. And you know what? I'm not sure that's for the worst. And as an EV guy, you might think, ah, you're crazy, Fred. More EVs for the better. But the Chevy Bolt EV is launched in 2016, and it's already starting to get old a little bit in terms of like the capabilities and everything. It's not a bad powertrain and everything. It's still pretty good. But the only thing I think could make the Bolt more relevant right now is a price decrease. I think they're going to have a hard time selling it without the full incentives. So I think they could, if they could bring the Bolt to like mass market production, make like a few hundred thousand units per year, and bring the price down to something closer to $25,000, would be a great car, would be a very successful car. That's not the case right now, and putting out more variants of it, not sure would help that much. So if instead they are focusing on the BEV3 platform, next-gen platform, that would enable not as much reliance on LG, which I think is the part of the problem with the Bolt EV, and I would assume would have still been the problem if you base other cars on it. So I don't know, but again, we don't know exactly if that might not be the plan. Maybe they just don't want to sell those cars anymore. I don't know. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, so with the Bolt, you know, everyone knows I'm a big Bolt fan, even though that there's obviously shortcomings with the appearance. With the, you know, interior, it's still very quick. You know, GM made the mistake of kind of putting too much of it in LG's hands, and I think they aren't able to get the price down or do variants as easily as they would be if it was in-house. For instance, you talked about getting the price down. If they made a 40-kilowatt-hour one that only went 180 miles or something, I think that would sell incredibly well if they could get the price down under $30,000, you know, before incentives. They could also do a four-wheel drive version of that and actually put a, you know, kind of like an SUV like on top of it. I think both of those things would do incredibly well, especially if they could get, you know, if they owned the technology and they could get the prices down. But they can't. Like, you know, part of a JV with LG is that they're kind of beholden to LG's whims, and LG is having no problems getting rid of batteries right now. Hyundai, Kia, you know, all over the world, even like some Nissans, are using LG batteries. And so, you know, if Chevy's trying to negotiate down the price of batteries, LG's like, nope, we got tons of people who are paying way more for them. So, you know, that's GM's problem. I think if GM worked really hard at getting a Bolt-like product, I mean, there's also, like, they should have sold the Bolt in Europe. Like, It's the perfect car.
They did to some degree, but they sold their all European operation at the same time they introduced it. So
yeah, but they should have just sold it as Chevy whatever. Yeah. They would have, I think, done much better there because it's a perfect European car. It's really small on the outside. It's kind of roomy on the inside. It's speedy. You could park it in city centers. Anyway, so Chevy's doing just about everything they can possibly do wrong with a perfectly good electric vehicle. So now they need to hit the reset button. Now they're going to go upmarket with Cadillac. They had the ELR, which is a Chevy Volt with a Cadillac trim on it.
And it
did extremely poorly. Yeah. Although we had a guy review it for Electrek who liked it quite a bit.
But he did get a giant discount for it when he bought it.
Giant discount. And they were even, it was...
The price made no sense. That's the thing. The price made no sense.
Right. So, like everybody knows, it's a Chevy Volt. You can't charge $40,000 more for... Mm-hmm. Anyway, hopefully GM has better luck with the Cadillac. Maybe they put the Super Cruise on there. They have a really cool car. I just don't have a lot of faith in... Like, there's certain people at GM that seem like they're really... on the ball. Like we met Pam Fletcher at EV, the first Bolt drive, and I was like, wow, this person is like she's got everything together. She knows what she's doing. And then you get like the guy who wrecked the Corvette, what's his name, Jerry Royce or something Royce, who makes all these statements like, we're going to support lowering the carb rate. So I feel like there's a lot of bureaucracy at GM. There's some really smart people there. Obviously, the Bolt is a really good car. But, in the marketing and in other sectors, I think they've dropped the ball on electric vehicles. Hopefully, they can reset themselves with Cadillac.
Hopefully, that's what they're doing and not just killing more EVs. We're going to move on to the last bit of news that we want to do today. But if you guys have any question for us that you want us to answer, but they put them now in the chat, and we're going to try to answer them after this quick Toyota news that we're going to mention here. So Toyota announced this week that they're going to open up 24,000 patents as a license, royalty-free licenses for the 24,000 patents that are related to electric components and systems. But there's a caveat to it, which is that you can only use them if you're making hybrids vehicle or fuel cells vehicle. So if you remember back in the day, maybe 5-6 years ago, Tesla opened up all their patents. They're saying we're going to try to accelerate the adoption of electric vehicles by letting anyone use our patents. Toyota said exactly the same thing this week, but not all electric vehicles, just the listed HEVs, so pure hybrids, plug-in hybrids, PHEV, and fuel cell electric vehicles. No electric vehicles are listed there. It sounds like they don't even want people to make electric vehicles based on their electric components, even though some of their electric components have nothing to do with just hybrids. They are electric motors, they are electric controllers, so things that are like batteries, things that you can use for both BEVs or hybrid electric vehicles. So the way we interpreted the news is that it's really just an attempt to save hybrids vehicle, which sales are going down, versus all electric vehicles, of course. And Toyota has been extremely late to the all electric game, which would still no all electric vehicles other than the compliance car that they released in the last generation of EVs, like the RAV4 EV, but that was built by Tesla. So they haven't done anything yet. They're supposed to come out with their first one next year, so we'll see what they do from there. But everything they said, all the language they use, always spell, we believe more in hybrids as a transitional step until fuel cell vehicles work, which they never will, at least not in the consumer product type of thing, because, it just doesn't make sense. You have not only need to build a different car, you need to build a whole different infrastructure, not just like charging station electric vehicles, but all the back-end infrastructure, because unlike electric vehicles, fuel cells don't have the electric grid behind it, where there's electricity everywhere. You can just plug into it. You need to build a whole new infrastructure to produce hydrogen and then to move hydrogen and then to refuel hydrogen tanks. If that doesn't sound like the gasoline model, then I don't know what does. And so they are still sticking to that, and they think that hybrids is going to be the best way to do it until the middle of time, because, of course, an hybrid is still powered by gas. And that's a bad look for Toyota. I mean, everything I just said looks like we are helping our friends in the oil and fossil fuel industry hold on to their asset as long as they can. Am I being a conspiracy theorist there, Seth?
No, I'm not a fan of Toyota these days. I actually just got rid of my plug-in Prius.
You did?
Yep. I'm fully electric now. I don't have any... there's no gas cars in the lot. So, yeah, just really disappointed. And actually, one of our early reviews was the Prius Prime plug-in, which was the upgrade to the plug-in that I had. And it was quite frustrating because the engine kept turning on. It's like, you know, this thing with Toyota and the oil companies, it feels like they're like, nope, you're gonna burn some oil. Like, you know, we have electric, we're giving you great mileage, but you're gonna burn oil, like, or hydrogen, I guess, in this case. Like, it just seems like they can't get off of that idea. So you know, whatever. Like, it doesn't sound like these patents are going to be worth anything to anybody because everybody's moving to full battery electric.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what they want. Maybe they're just like, hey, you know, anybody out there still doing hydrogen, here's some help. So, should we go to the questions?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It doesn't seem like we got that many questions.
I found a few. Yeah. So Daniel Mauricio says, how will the Taycan affect Model S sales? And I think the Taycan might kind of affect Model S sales. You know, clearly it's kind of aimed at the Model S. Porsche has been, testing the Model S and testing the Taycan against it. So it's clearly in the same kind of realm. What do you think, Fred? Taycan sales?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that it's going to affect it a little bit because it's directly in the same segment. And from what we hear so far, the Taycan is going to be a pretty great car. So, yeah, it's going to affect them by how much. I really don't know. We're going to see until the car needs to launch. And then we need to know exactly what's going to be competing with in terms of Tesla's Model S, because as we just reported earlier in the podcast, there's going to be some upgrades to Model S this year. So let's wait until the end of the year when we see the production version of the Taycan and what the Model S will become at the end of the year, and then we're going to have a good idea of just how close competitors those two cars are. But I definitely think they will be to some degree competitors, and they're going to steal sales from each other.
All right, so Andy Peters says the new capital raise will happen on the investors AP4 demo later this month. That could be why they're calling it an investor thing.
I've been calling for Elon to do a capital raise for a while. I think it was in the last podcast, the podcast before that, where I said right now Tesla is making the consumers and the employees pay for their issues, and indirectly investors are paying through the price dropping, but they should pay through some dilution by doing an equity raise, I think. And they should do a biggest one they can do, and from there they should use that cash to accelerate their vehicle programs. The problem is that if they do it right now, they do it from a weak position because
exactly.
They just released.
They could have done so much better last year.
Yeah, last year or early in this year, they could have done much better without this relatively bad quarter. So yeah, maybe Autopilot self-driving event might be a good time to just show the investor, here what we got. Pretty cool, right? You want to put some more cash in us?
Right.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I hope they do. I hope Tesla can get a bigger cash position and use it to build Tesla Semi, accelerate the Model Y program, finally make that $35,000 Model 3 real thing. That'd be nice, right?
Right. Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of areas where Tesla could use some cash at the moment.
Yeah. like their bank account.
Right. So. All right. So when do you expect to see the difference in Tesla batteries from the Maxwell technology purchase? That's kind of a interesting question because we don't really know much about what Tesla's buying from Maxwell.
Well, we're going to start seeing something once they can close that name acquisition. Yeah. They have some problem closing it. They've been extending the deadline. But they did say originally that they see it close in Q2. So we're just now starting Q2. So it's not that big of a deal. But there's a class action lawsuit from Maxwell investors. So that could be an issue. And Tesla had to extend the deadline. So we'll see. In the next few weeks, we should have a better idea of them closing the acquisition, and once they close, all their IPs is their IP, so they can start using it freely. But I don't think they can legally use anything they have right now until the acquisition is closed, unless they do a licensing deal. And why would you do a licensing deal if you're about to acquire the company? I don't know. We'll see.
Again. So Cedric Weinstein from Sweden says, everybody, media included, is talking about the Model 3, assuming that's the case all over Europe. Not about the S and X anymore, so those two models have gone under the radar completely. Maybe that accounts for some of the drop in numbers. Let's see.
Yeah, that's fair. Though, when that happened in the U.S., Tesla said that it would actually help Model S and X sales because people were coming in, I want that Model 3. And they said, oh yeah, that's going to be a few weeks, a few months, or whatnot. You want that Model S that's in the lot right now? We can get it to you in 2 days. And that did help Model S and XLs. Wasn't the case in Europe, though, for some reason.
Beach Crow says, Fred may be on Tesla's shit list. By asking too many questions and expecting answers. I think we found a certain PR person's YouTube account. Tesla's a business. They don't have to tell all.
They don't have to tell me anything, but the... they do answer my question most of the time.
Tell the people. Make a blog post. What's going on with the Model 3? Yeah. It's not hard.
I mean, I'm not mad because they're not answering my question. I'm mad because they're not answering basic question that should have been answered in the first place that I shouldn't even have to ask. So it's not about me being on the shit list or anything like that. It's about them just being weird about the way they want to communicate their products and their new specs and everything like that. Tesla delivering their standard range yet? No, we've been through that, Mr. Musk, Aaron Musk.
Yeah. So Matt Senkow says, should the Model 3 should be $38,000 with inflation since the first Model 3 rolled off the line? That also might be a Tesla person account. I don't think that's going to happen. Or I don't think people are going to be okay with that. No. Incentives are supposed to rise. Norway can afford their massive incentives because they swim in oil, which is true, which is weird and ironic.
Yeah. They are don't get high on your own supply kind of country.
Yeah. All right, carbon fiber spoilers. What's the radio silence from Tesla on that?
That's insane. I had my Tesla Model 3 for over 6 months now, and Tesla tells me a spoiler and a badge. They haven't delivered a spoiler and a badge, and it might sound stupid, but I bought them, you owe them to me, and you're not delivering them 6 months after the car. I still love the car. The car is great without a spoiler, it's great without a badge, but it just shows, like, it's embodies Tesla's difficulty delivering product like nothing else. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. Maybe mm-hmm. They should outsource that to like EV Annex or the whatever the performance guys.
You still need to install it. Like it's glued on, so it's not that big of a deal. But
a spoiler, just like send it out. Like outsource that. Come on.
They keep saying that it's gonna be like mobile installation type of thing, so you won't need to bring your car. I'm like, all right, but. It's not happening either way, so why do I care? And now I might send my car to California too. So like, now what's going to happen? Is I'm gonna
road trip?
No. I'm gonna send it. I'm not gonna do a road trip. But
you go across Canada now.
Are you crazy? Half of Canada is nothing. Like it's driving through nothing. But I was more saying that about sending the car to California and then So what does it mean? So Tesla Montreal was supposed to install my thing. So now can I still get it in California? Or will I ever get my Sporter? Who knows? Might do a third-party Sporter. We reported on the more aerodynamic one from Unplugged Performance. Maybe I'll just do that instead.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions? I'm scrolling. No Giga Europe until capital raise.
How do you think Tesla's energy department did in Q1 from Crazy John? Pretty bad, probably. I mean, yeah. Q1 is not the best quarter for solar, first of all. And solar has been going way down for Tesla. They've been waiting for some kind of product differentiation with both new solar panels, which are coming later this year. So one bat won't have a big impact on Q1. And, of course, the other big one is the solar roof, which, again, we have no indication of that ramping up just yet. So, no, nothing would be great in terms of the energy department. There's the, of course, when you say energy department, it probably also mean the energy storage side of things. Some indication that Powerwall might be ramping up a little bit. They've been reaching out to the people that want them for the referral program, and Seth himself here, as some of them could be coming as soon as a few weeks.
Yeah, if I don't choose the Founder Series ones, I can get them in 68 weeks. If I choose the Founder Series one, I have to wait 3 months. And if I wait for a signature from Elon, it may be 3 months to forever. So I'm probably going to get the white ones.
Yeah, you're not going to want to wait just for a signature from Elon. No, or maybe you can invite him for dinner or something at your place at one point, and then he signs them there.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Can have the kids ask him some questions. It'd be fun.
All right, that's going to be it, guys, for us this week. Thanks a lot for listening and watching on YouTube. Thanks a lot to our sponsor, Dandelion. And we're going to see you same time, same place next week. Ciao.